freestyle. Too adept in the situation, too shy. And though the road is rocky, I'm ready to try the next mile to bring sight to the blind man. It's down to the left child. We will survive in this country wilderness. Swimming through the waters above and not like a rebel fish. Journalist, specialist, predatory, and survivalist. Spitting heaven fire from his lips. Burn a slave driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people, we'll turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. All thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your host, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to get involved in the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live audio at several locations. We're streaming at timeforanawakening.com. Which is the homepage, and you can catch the live stream at that location. You can hear us streaming at www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. And live stream is playing there also. We're streaming at abitumi.com. That's abitumi.com/timeforanawakening. They stream from Ghana. Or you can download the TuneIn Radio app to any of your devices. TuneIn Radio is a free radio app. In that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you had a Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, it's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you'll always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program. The fan page on Facebook and Time for an Awakening media is also there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening media, interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also, check out that Time for an Awakening marketplace and our partnership with the BB Toomey. Always interesting things in the marketplace all the time. Various African language classes, class on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. It's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 6:08 on this Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening, this Sunday, April 5th edition of Time for an Awakening. Our guest this evening is you, an open forum conversation, and you can always join us by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 6:13 on this Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. Before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum. You're in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Hey, Elliot, I'm, you know, the day for those who are into the acknowledgement and celebration of what is called Easter, it made me think of something, you know, Elliot. You know, it made me think, you know, I said the last time we were on, you know, we are winning. Right. And I think it's important for us to now to constantly bring forward that, even though there's images and words saying, you know, how much we're trapped, but we are winning. And for this day, it made me think about how winning means that, you know, the whole thing arising again. Right. And you know, as I was thinking about, you know, Easter and the whole thing of rising and that we're winning, it made me think of a symbol of the ancient Kemetic or ancient Egyptian. They had what they called the Bennu bird. And that symbol, which was before the phoenix, it was a bird that, you know, as they described it, that represented the sun rising up. Now, this is at 2600 BC, BCE. So like 3,000 years on the continent of Africa, they had a symbol about a rising sun. And I just thought that was interesting to just throw out there as we go through, you know, time for awakening and for the day.
Well, Richard, well, I, you know what? I and I'm sorry I didn't do that. I thought about the Ashwa Kwesi and bringing him on during this period just to kind of explain a lot of that, because some of our people think that the symbols of Christianity and things that have been twisted, regurgitated, and given back to us relates to some type of celebration dealing with eggs, bunnies, and everything else, and has nothing to do with that. Those things came from cultural symbols. It came from culture, African culture, all of those things. When you talked about the Bennu bird, you see in the Bible, it talks about doves rising and things of that nature. All of those things are related to black African culture. It has nothing to do with Europeans or the symbols that they want to throw in there and the things that they claim that those things represent to them. So I just, you know, to kind of dovetail or follow up on what you're saying, I totally agree and understand what you're saying. In fact, I, you know, Dr. Kwesi hasn't been on with us in quite a while. In fact, I haven't saw him since we brought him here, and that was before COVID. Got to get him on to kind of talk about those things.
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be great, especially at this point in time.
Yeah, I wish I'd have been thinking about that when because I knew that we had an open date this particular day. I would have did that. I'm sorry, I wasn't even thinking, Richard. My mind was.
I didn't even suggest it to you. Wow. As I was sitting here, I was just thinking of, you know, thinking about that and the whole thing about, as you say, you know, the symbol appropriation and how we must take these symbols but tie it to our political realities now. No, that's what I would suggest and assert. Not tie it to the belief systems that, you know, that or the commercial aspect of it or the belief systems to anyone's religious, you know, belief, but to black people and particularly black people in America are working to rise in this moment where things seem like, you know, other people are being devastated. We have to, you know, have that consciousness of victory. And I think it's appropriate to bring forward that it isn't just about observance. It's about our actual engagement to what some would call our liberation.
Richard, I totally agree with what you're stating about on the rise and what's happening, because we see these things happening and they're happening more rapidly. And we realize that the salvation of our people is within grasp. I'll put it that way. But, you know, when we talk about these things, and especially when things is brought up showing the precarious situation that our people find themselves in here, I don't do that, and I'm quite sure you don't do that, to kind of say that the war is me type of thing. It's just to alert our people that we have to really get busy. This is a serious situation. We're in serious times, and we need to focus, and especially for our women and our children, we need to focus on salvation strategies to help them. Because we live in a system that's full of distractions. Whether it's sporting events, football, baseball, basketball, the Final Four, entertainers performing in your city, and it's full of distractions. While a lot of these other things are going on that's going to affect your life in a more serious way. So, you know, that I just want to mention that in reference to some of the things you mentioned just momentarily, Richard, a few minutes ago. Richard, a couple of things, because, you know, I know you've been talking about this in past programs. We had Jared Ball on with us on a couple of occasions talking about propaganda. And the more you see now about what's going on currently with this war in Iran, and at any time it can spill over into a global conflict, mm-hmm. and it might be doing that as we speak, is the propaganda. And I thought about that because I was listening to the Carl Nelson show on Tuesday, I think it was, and a caller brought up Marcus Garvey's chapter on propaganda.
Mm.
And immediately I thought about you, and I called you and talked about it, and you shared with me that particular chapter in the opinions of Marcus Garvey. And I'm probably, you know, in fact, I want to read a portion of that and just get you to expand on it from your perspective, because you've been pushing and you've been talking about this. You brought Jared Ball on with us, and he expanded on it, talked about it from his perspective. But I want to read it and then to get you to expand on some of that, Richard, you don't mind.
Yeah, let's have it. I think it's important to have a discussion, especially at this moment, because I think the height of propaganda is going on now, because even in when they call something a war in 1 minute, and a conflict or whatever the next minute. So, yes.
It's a couple other things I want to bring up, too. This whole thing around it, because we see that in Brother Carr up there in New York City sent me an article where the Black Caucus making a statement about what this president recently did in reference to DEI. Mm. But it all relates to something else that has nothing to do with DEI. And I'd like to kind of talk about that maybe a little bit later on in the program, and kind of compare it to historical situations. And if we compare it to history and our struggle here with Europeans, we see that we're constantly repeating almost the same things.
Mm.
We're treading the same feel, so to speak, constantly doing the same thing. But I think it'll be more plain if it's presented in a different manner. I'll try to present it in a manner that I think is kind of cogent for people to understand, and maybe we can kick that around. I'll throw that out a little bit later in the program. But Richard, before I read some of the what Garvey wrote, I know that you're aware, and you, well, I think that you are, because you move around a lot more than me. The president of Ghana was here. It's been over a week ago now. And he spoke at Temple University. You're aware of that?
Right.
Well, and, you know, that was like an extended tour, so to speak, because he spoke before that at the South-South Conference in Colombia.
Right.
With South American nations, Caribbean nations, and African nations there, talking about the global struggle on reparations and talking about the work that they're doing. They weren't just running them out. They were talking about the work that they're doing in reference to this, to make this a reality. He came here to Philadelphia and spoke at Temple University. But his objective was not to speak at necessarily at Temple University. I was talking to a fellow that I know that comes to my place of business, and he told me that a professor that he knows at Temple was instrumental in bringing him there, but he went through a lot of heat in order to do it. Mm. The thing I wanted to mention, Richard, and then I wanted our people to grasp and understand that when, you know, when, and especially me, because I do this, and I know that I do it. When I point the finger, and it's not necessarily to bash anybody, It's that we can all do better. See, this is hurting all of us.
Yeah.
I don't say this in reference to Jeffries, Meeks, or any of them to make them look bad, make them look idiotic or stupid, even though I might make comments to that effect. This affects all of us. So when we do this, this hurts all of us. And we as a collective need to see this and point it out. That way the persons or person that's guilty of it can either change or say, well, listen, I don't care what you say. I'm going to do what I want to do. They need to be forced to give an explanation is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying that to say this. You know, John Mahama, the president of Ghana, wanted to speak at Lincoln University. Lincoln University was the first, and I'm not sticking, Richard, you correct me if I'm wrong. It's the first university education institution in this country for black people that was established by us. He wanted to speak there because not only was the first, but Kwame Nkrumah, when he came to this country, that's where he went to. He went to Lincoln University with his brothers there, even though he was from the continent. All his brothers were there. Family. There was family, Richard. It was family. Unlike some of our other misguided brothers and sisters feel about everybody, these people are different, you know, like they were from Mars. No, they're family. They might be separated family, but they were family. He came here and went to Lincoln University before he went back to Ghana. So John Mahama wanted to speak at Lincoln University. But the invitation to him was rescinded, even though it was given at first. It was rescinded, and I think it was the honorary doctorate. I don't know whether that, you could correct me if I'm wrong on that, Richard. I know the honorary doctorate and the invitation itself, because he didn't get the honorary doctorate, even though if it was or was not going to be given. The invitation itself was rescinded, and he didn't speak at Lincoln because his position on LGBTQ and Ghana's position, along with several African countries' position about that lifestyle and their non-promotion of it.
Mm.
Now, I don't know whether you were aware of that, Richard.
No, I wasn't. That was just the first time I heard that. I knew he was going to speak here, and I knew he was going to speak at Temple. And I knew he was supposed to speak at Lincoln, but I didn't hear that he was the reason why he didn't get to speak.
Yeah, because I'm here. I'm representing Ghana, and those are the laws and culture of our country. So you know, I don't know whether they expected him to disavow or to speak against it. I don't know what they expected, but when he said, "Well, no, I'm not," you know. It is what it is, and I'm just paraphrasing. Mm-hmm. They rescinded the invitation, and I think the honorary doctorate, I might be cloudy on that, but I know the invitation was rescinded.
Right.
Because the cultural position on acceptance of LGBTQ behavior. Richard, you listen. What he's stating is cultural.
Right.
For whatever our folks want to deny or disavow or look the other way, if they consider themselves believers in Scripture, they see that it's written in there. It's against Scripture. It was against those men's African culture to have acceptance of that.
Mm.
Now, any of us now that want to accept it, it's because Europeans accepted it. It's a cultural acceptance for Europeans to accept that behavior. That's not a racist statement. That's not a bigoted statement. That's a historically true statement. Look back at kingdoms, civilizations that Europeans want to put out as their standards, which is Greece and Rome. That was a major component in Greco-Roman culture was homosexuality. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Black people can't point to any black civilizations where that was a staple in the government and a cultural behavior that people practiced. You can't. So if you as a black person want to accept that now, then you're willing to accept someone else's culture. That as simple as that.
The process of the culture, this, as they call it, Western American civilization that ties itself to Rome and Greece, is something that you either want to assimilate to or you don't.
Exactly. And when he said, you know, when I guess I wasn't privy to the conversations, but I do know that the invitation was rescinded when, you know, I don't know what they expected him to say. Well, listen, I disavow that. I'm going to change the law. Because if you remember, Richard, when Biden was president and Kamala Harris, and this was before Harris and them, if you remember Hillary Clinton under Obama went over there to push that among African countries. And right. The overwhelming response was no. Well, right. If you remember, Biden sent Harris over there to do the same thing.
Right.
And I played some of the clips when the men said, listen, and I played the, I don't want to get it wrong, whether they call it, it's another group that's over the president in Ghana. It's a group of representatives.
Yeah.
And they were saying that, you know, Madam Vice President, whatever that's what is done in the United States. But the president don't have to say here. We do. You remember when he said that?
Right.
So, you know, these things were already talked about before. And African nations made their statement. Uganda, Kenya, Ghana, several other countries made their statement in reference to that. So the man comes here to talk to black students at a university about the global struggle for reparations and to acknowledge Kwame Nkrumah, him being at Lincoln, to acknowledge the university, and you tell him or rescind the invitation because he's against LGBTQ acceptance. And that's a black university.
Right.
And you don't hear nothing about it on the black talk station here in the city.
Right.
As calling the people, whether it's the dean, the administration, or whoever, to the carpet for doing that. See, this is these are some of the problems, Richard. That's a problem.
Right. You know, I have a reaction to that, Elliot, as you lay that out. It makes, like you said, that it is a black institution. I consider it's one of the HBCUs. I'm always trying to, I'm in search of black political thought, right, Elliot? And particularly African Americans, as we've been developing our political thought, which goes to your point about, not necessarily condemning black elected officials, for example, but just trying to make sure we understand the representation that we're selecting for in the political arena that we send people to, because black people send those guys to it. But when we get to the institutions of higher education, the black institutions of higher education, and in the context of formulating black political thought, the thing that what you described that I'm going to say, yes, it disturbs me. Right. Because, black one to me, the component, I may be off, a black political thought is to recognize that we have diversity, that we shouldn't even and that we're in an environment. I mean, in the United States that has always been hostile to our view, our political view of the world. Our worldview. So if there's a nation state, because he's not just an individual, as you're saying, and he's beholden to a parliament.
Mm-hmm.
who are there based off of, regardless of what we may know or don't know about how they get to those seats, are based off of the will of the people, which is what you're describing. And the will of the people is saying this here behavior, social behavior that your country may, your country that you're in, which is America, may represent, we don't adhere to it. I'm only reiterating the point that you're making in this. But the thing as far as for when we're talking about Black political thought and recognizing that we're, it's at times we always had to be in opposition to, as you say, the national culture as it is or as it is evolving, you know, politically. And it seemed to me that, you know, when a Black institution that is shaping the worldview of future Black thinkers, that one of the things that we should be a part of that political thought is the understanding about that there is diversity, that just because they don't accept this, your country of your location, cultural norms, that they don't accept it, that we should not accept them because they don't accept the cultural norms of this society. I don't know if I'm making sense. I'm saying that Black people and Black institutions, especially Black institutions of higher thinking, should be embracing, as an example, a representative from a nation state who doesn't agree with the nation state we're in. Because if they don't, then we're saying that we are, whether we are being, that we are in alignment with other things that America does and perpetuates on other people. And one of those things, as you said, was trying to get other African nation states to accept what happens here as it relates to homosexuality and transgender or sexual preference. They have their reasons for not accepting that. But we as Black people shouldn't be, you know, like saying just because America don't accept it, we should be saying because you are a brother, I hear that you don't accept it. That's okay. But we still accept you. Hopefully I'm trying to get to that. That regardless if America doesn't accept it, that we shouldn't hold you off because you are a brother. And that image of what Mandela said to Ted Koppel comes to mind to try to make that point, right? When he was talking about Castro.
Mm-hmm.
That's because he's your enemy. That don't mean he has to be my enemy. And I think that to me should be a component of Black political thought because of our particular history. And because when we're talking about reparatory justice or reparations, that the Black world has a legitimate argument. But I won't go no further because we heard when he gave his speech, Brother Muhammad, you know, the head of state gave a speech at the UN, you heard the response of United States. They said, look, it was legal here. Does that mean we as Black folks supposed to just accept that it was legal here?
Yeah, well, listen, I didn't hear any pushback from people that represent Black folks on the American stage and possibly the world stage. I didn't hear any pushback saying, whoa, wait a minute, hold up. We don't accept that. They didn't say anything, Richard. Nothing. Now, we talked about that last week, but nothing. It is a week later. Nothing was said about that. So maybe they go along. Maybe they agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
That it wasn't nothing wrong with what happened.
That's, you know, and this ties to what you're saying, you know, in the sense of Lincoln not accepting them, you know, is the same kind of thing. Are we in agreement? Well, just because it's legal is okay. Are we in agreement because they don't accept it? We supposed to not accept it too? Or do we not have the power to accept it even if we wanted to, which is a whole nother issue. Somebody whisper in your ear, look, say no. Just say no. You want to come speak there? Just say no. That's a whole different context to me, Elliot.
Yeah, I just when I because the friend of mine posted on social media that he was there, and he had Lincoln. You know, and maybe I didn't read it closely because I had Lincoln in the show, Muhammad on stage, the President Muhammad on stage. But when I found out from another person that he was at Temple because Lincoln rescinded the invitation, I said, no. I said, a good friend of mine was at Lincoln when he spoke. Then I saw the friend of mine Saturday, and he said, no, he didn't come to Lincoln. And he explained to me why.
Mm. Yeah.
I said, boy, I'm telling you, nothing. And Lincoln's here. I ain't talking about, you hear a report in New York or Atlanta or Chicago why he didn't speak at Lincoln. Lincoln is here. It's the outskirts of Philadelphia, but it's here.
Right. And a lot of the students, some of the students from here go there.
Exactly.
Yeah. But, Elliot, but one of the things going to that point about the, and I appreciate you saying that in the sense of, it's not a criticism of those who are in those chambers. And it's not just the national chambers, it's those that are in the state chambers and in the local chambers or the political of the different municipalities and states and the Congress, that we have or we should have as Black people have different expectation of our representatives. But one thing I wanted to raise in that, because it's important to raise, at least if our expectation and then be look at what the actual outcome of the representatives in that moment of certain critical decisions that they have to make, just like Lincoln had a critical decision to make, and we see how they made their decision. What I'm getting to is that it requires, as we're looking, to the now and the future, it requires a institutional development, I would say, that we have to have at local level that develops leadership and develops a mechanism that reinforces what is our representatives in that area. And the language that I have is it can't be the political parties, because the political parties, they're made up of whole different dynamics of a whole lot of different interest groups beyond ours. And we know that. So they're hostile to Black representation. But we should have people assemblies that are separate from the political party that has some kind of capacity to be able to, what is that word, identify political leadership that would be going to those parties that would be held accountable by those assemblies that says these are the issues that you should be able to speak to, whether we say it by presenting the agenda or by knowing your culture, your political culture of what you represent. And I would say right now, Elliot, you and the Time for Awakening audience, we don't have that to the degree, those people assemblies where we come together and talk about how we want our leadership to respond in that hostile environment. We don't have those assemblies, and we need those. I don't know if you would agree with that.
Well, yeah, I mean, those are part of checks and balances that, but Richard, let me say this, because the people that do those things, that volunteer for those type of things, they're there. It's people that really care about our communities. Those people assemblies are basically already set up. But they're set up to facilitate the political parties that we're dealing with, Richard, if you follow what I'm saying.
Oh, no, Ellis, say it's not true. No, but I understand definitely what you're saying.
They are. For example, here in Philadelphia, New York has a similar government where you have council people. You have council, and then you have the mayor. Well, a lot of the council people come from these neighborhoods.
Right.
Some of the council people, men and women, grew up, they people know them. They're friends and right. relatives. But you also have committee people. You have block captains.
Mm.
See, all of these things, that's your council of elders right there.
Mm.
But see, they're fashioned around this political environment.
Mm.
Where it's money, I can get some money, and I want to get paid. I'm telling you, man, this man has fashioned this Western society, and he made sure that our people didn't get reparations because it always puts our people at a disadvantage in a capitalist Western society
mm-hmm.
because everything is centered around money.
Right.
And you don't have the discretionary money. That's key, the discretionary spending. See, if you mm-hmm. make a living wage according to the definition of a living wage, then you have discretionary money. It's all involved. But when you have money and your money is basically to keep a roof over your head, to keep your children fed, and to buy clothes, and if you do anything else, you dipping into something that you don't have, then you can't give to, if Richard wanted to spend time taking the children to museums and mm-hmm. buying reading material for them and parents donate. See, if you're going to see the suburban areas where these whites are, some of the women, soccer moms or whatever, they ain't working. And they work because right. they want to work. They don't work because they have to work. See, when you got a black family and a man's working and he got a wife or girlfriend or whatever that, and they got children, she's working because she has to work. And he's working definitely because he has to work. Their family dynamic is not necessarily like that. And it's clear. All you got to do is look at their net worth, their average wealth compared to black families. So when it's a drive at the school, some type of food drive or the money to raise for this, that, or the other. And a lot of these soccer moms go right to home, get the money from their husband or get it from the kitty that they got at home and bring it right to the school. The money right. is there. It's not like that in black communities necessarily. So you're always at a disadvantage. And the next thing you know, some of these groups that want to do good for the community, they're going to people that's going to use them instead of them working for the interests of black people.
Mm. And I have to add, not only not having the money when we're strapped for a resource, we don't have the time because, as you say, we have to use that time to try to get at least the minimal resources. So we don't even have the time. When people say they're not there, it makes it factors out that some people are all their time is squeezed just to do what they're doing.
Yes. Yes.
And as they try to tell us, time is money. But if you ain't got no time and your life is not organized to give you time, you can't even be able to go to knock on door and talk to your neighbor. What do you think about what just happened? Or what should I do about, what should we do about the children down the street that seem to be not able to eat? Because they tell us that like 50% in some areas of children live in poverty.
Yeah. So. Go ahead, finish your thought, Richard.
That just seemed to reinforce the thought you had.
Yeah, you mentioned something about, and I'm looking at some of these stats now. Maybe I'll throw them in later on in the program, these child poverty stats. But, Richard, and that's why I always give, when Sister Jabbar was on with us last week, And I talked about her being an activist and an organizer, and mm-hmm. gave her flowers for doing that, and her husband the same thing. Because it, to me, it's rare when you see both husband and wife mm-hmm. is activists. I mean, you know, you might see one and one is a supporter. You know what I mean? But they're not really out there like the other one. But both of them are out there. So, and that's a sacrifice, Richard. When you're talking mm-hmm. about some of these women that want to help some of these children that don't have proper meals and all, and they're knocking on doors or organizing or trying to raise money, that's a sacrifice.
Right.
And it's the time used and the dedicated, I mean, that's why I always tip my hat to people doing that. That's a huge sacrifice. Because some people, they just want to go to work, do what they do, whatever, and they don't want, you know, they don't mind you sacrificing, but they're not going to necessarily do it. And I'm not saying that to detract from anybody. Some people are not built like that. But we can all help other people if we're not built like that.
Right.
Richard, you know, I want to say something before I mention the thing I want to share on propaganda and get you to expand on it. This war that's going on now, because it kind of made me this morning here on local news station, they had this Archbishop from Philadelphia. From that Peter and Paul church up there in Center City.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then they had a reverend from Enon, Alan mm-hmm. Waller. They both gave an address for Easter, this Easter holiday.
Right.
And I didn't watch it, but I can imagine some of the things that were stated. Now, I look at Dr. King when he had the speech from the Riverside Church and said that America was the biggest purveyor of violence mm-hmm. in the world. And basically talked about the United States, talked about the involvement at that time, Vietnam. And then I look now and I'm wondering where, because we already talked about the elected leadership not saying anything and talking about the war and abstracts. And when I say abstracts, talking about, well, you didn't come to Congress to get the okay. We don't know all the you know, we want to know the ins and outs and what happened. You know, the nuanced stuff instead of, but the clergy leadership, black clergy, speaking out on this, it's you don't hear it.
Right.
I think the only pastor that I heard say anything about this being morally wrong was, and his name escapes me, the pastor, heavyset brother, I think.
Butler, I see him, but I can't think of his name.
Yeah. I think he got like a bad back because it looks like he had trouble.
Right.
Yeah. He spoke and saying that this war is morally wrong. Yeah, he was the only one that I've heard say anything about it and Dr. West ain't no pastor, but I mean, you know, even though he talks about the Bible a lot, I don't think he is. I know he has a seminary degree, but I don't think he's a pastor.
Elliot, sorry for breaking in, but his name is Reverend Barber.
Okay.
I'm off.
Thank you. Yeah, Reverend Barber. I heard Barber say about this war being morally wrong, but none of the rest of them I've heard say anything about it. And I'm talking about clergy leadership.
Right.
But when you, now they had they showed a segment of the Pope talking about war. And, you know, it kind of gets me when you hear the cliches that this man killing man, war is wrong. See, you know, that's good to say. But why don't you point the finger at who's doing it? See, because it's their own brothers that's doing this. They'll never call the United States out. And this Pope that's in there now is from the United States. I think he was born in Chicago or something. He's from here. So he'll use just pejorative type of statements about war is wrong. Everybody knows that. And killing is wrong. But, you know, it's somebody that starts all these conflicts. It's somebody at the straw that stirs the drink, so to speak. It's somebody involved that's always starting these things. And it's clear who started this. Now, they did something the other day that's against the Geneva Convention. And, well, I guess they're going to talk about it in the UN, I would assume, because more and more with a lot of these African nations stepping up, kind of forcing the issue in the UN, some of these other nations are starting to talk. I know you noticed that, Richard.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that bridge that just got blown up in Iraq the other day, America acknowledges they blew the bridge up. So you talk to you look at other media and see more of the story, so to speak. Now, I was watching other media, and it mentioned that the bridge was blown, but that the United States and Israel did a double tap. Now, it's the same thing they did at the schools that were blown up earlier when this war first started. Two schools was blown up. Now, I don't know whether you're familiar with this double tap, Richard.
This is the first time I heard that.
Well, let me, and for the listening audience that's not. The double tap in warfare is a controversial, often criminal tactic involving a second strike at the same target after a 5 to 30 minute delay to intentionally kill rescuers, medics, civilians arriving to assist survivors, used by artillery to multiply casualties. It violates international law by targeting protected individuals. So this is something that's been, you know, even though they give rules of war, so to speak, this is something that's against the Geneva Convention and is morally wrong. Now, with that school, the two schools that was blown up in Iran with the girls, I think they were girls' schools. They were, I think, ages 8 to 12 or something like that. After the schools were blown up, and I guess parents got news that schools was blown up, they immediately go into the school. Anybody is going to the school. And the rescue workers immediately went to the school. And they were blown up because they used a double tap with the schools, according to other news sources, not here. Well, they used the same thing on that bridge the other day. According to other media, the United States acknowledged that the bridge was blown, but other media said that it was a double tap on the bridge. That when rescue workers and medics and all and people that was, because they said around that bridge, it's like a resort, that's a park area where people, you know, go with families. When people found out that the bridge was blown, they went there and United States and Israel did another strike like 30 minutes later to intentionally kill civilians and rescue workers. So when you see these things and these leaders have addresses, in one of the strikes, a Catholic priest was killed. This was recently. So when you see these addresses that these pontiffs and all make, they don't point the finger at what's going on. They just use generalities and generalizations. Oh, war is wrong. Stop the killing. Come on here. Is somebody doing this? Is somebody heavily involved in this?
It makes me think of this article I just seen that came out April 2nd it was printed in Just Security, where over 100 international law experts warn U.S. strikes on Iran violate U.N. Charter and may be crimes of war. And now they have 100 of this letter is constructed by 100 different legal, it says, the United States and Israel initial its strikes on Iran 1 month ago on February 28th, 2026. The attack was a clear violation of United Nations Charter, the conduct of the war, and statements of U.S. officials also raised serious concerns about the violation of international humanitarian law, including potential war crimes. We have written the below statement together with over 100 U.S.-based international law experts to detail our profound concern about the war. The letter is signed by the international law experts across the United States, including senior professors, leaders of prominent institutional law associations, non-governmental organizations and legal clinics, former government legal advisors and military law experts, and former judge advocate generals. I want to make sure we don't lose sight to the point that you raise. And again, I may be overly, focused on the Black institution of representation and leadership. And you raised about the black leadership within the religious leadership and their voice in relationship to this. And here, we see that others are recognizing that what, as you say, who's doing it, not only who's doing it, but what are they doing? And at the cost, because they get ready to ask for $1.5 trillion, while at the same time, the leader of this country is saying, we ain't got the money to pay for daycare.
I know it. And wait a minute, Richard. See, and that's another thing, too. Come on, man. This will be some more ammunition. Listen, this country already spends more than any other country in the world. In fact, you can almost put 50 other countries together, and they don't spend nowhere near the money that the United States spends on weaponry. They spend I think this year's budget was $445 billion. And this guy said that he's going to ask for $1.5 trillion from Congress.
Well, it was up to $1 trillion. Now they want $500 billion more because of this.
Yeah, $1.5 trillion from Congress. Now, I want all Black folks in the listen to this program, monitor your Black elected officials. See if they vote, if they listen to Schumer, because Schumer is heavily involved in it. His brothers over there in Israel is heavily involved in it. They need the money too. In fact, they're going to split the $1.5 trillion probably. Watch your elected officials. See how they vote on this when it's presented. Because this guy said he's going to ask for it, so it might come up in Congress very soon.
And Elliot, either way, it seems to me, based off of what they're saying, and I don't want to go down this rabbit hole, but based off of what they're saying, either this conflict and I think it was I get to hear Rubio more than anybody, right? So Rubio, he took it out of the context of war, and he gave it a different context, in another interview. But the thing is, they're saying how much it costs for each missile that they send. Now we, as I think I've said before, they got to replace that missile. So even if they stop today, they stop throwing missiles. All the missiles that they have already sent, they got to replace if they're going to replace them with the same thing. And it's going to be at the same cost. and it's going to be with the same companies, and the same companies have the same shareholders who actually walk away pejoratively with the bag. So regardless, as you're saying, this scale of armament that it has to be manufactured, there are people, individuals, who will benefit based off of their connection to the companies that are producing them. But here we are, we got to come out not only with that in the tax that we got to pay in order to pay for those armaments, but we got to come out with the cost that we got to pay when we go to the grocery store and the price of the goods increase because of the armaments. I don't know if that makes sense, but yeah.
Well, listen, if you want to add something to it, he stated when they talk about the things that they were going to cut to make up this $1.5 trillion was LIHEAP. Now, I didn't know this, Richard, until they said it in a news report that Philadelphia, and the reason I didn't think it was possible, because Philadelphia is not the largest city in this country. Mm-hmm. You got New York, Chicago, L.A., they're larger than Philadelphia. I think Houston took over that spot that Philadelphia was in and pushed them down to like fifth, I think. But you got cities that's larger than them, although Houston is kind of a warm area most of the time. But Philadelphia is the largest recipient of LIHEAP in this country.
Mm.
Now, for people that don't know what LIHEAP is, that's a assistance for paying your heat, you know, your power bills, your heat, especially your heat, gas and oil. Getting assistance to do that. And here in Philadelphia, in fact, now all you got to do is probably pull it up. You know who's the largest recipient because we're not making the money that these other people are.
Right.
It's black folks, especially single women and seniors especially. Because believe me, when they're cutting these LIHEAP, they ain't going to cut no equally across no board. That ain't how this country operates. Because black people is quick to go on black media and all, talk about, white people in Appalachia and West Virginia, they always use West Virginia like only poor whites in West Virginia.
I hear that all the time. I get so tired. I say, well, wait a minute now. Can y'all just stick with black folks for a minute?
I know.
Why is it you got to go all over everybody else? I mean, yeah, we recognize that. But can't we be able to stick with the particular and show how the effect is universal more than just saying everybody else got it?
Yeah, well, listen, Richard, you know, they ain't going to do no slashes across the board with any of these programs, LIHEAP or any of them. They know who's getting these benefits. When it comes down to a white family that needs LIHEAP and a black family, who you think going to get cut?
Mm-hmm.
Some black folks think they're just going to cut across the board. Everybody going to hurt. Certainly, you're going to see white families hurt, but you're going to be hurting most. And they said that the LIHEAP, the largest recipient of LIHEAP is Philadelphia.
Mm.
And that's one of the programs he said he's going to cut for that $1.5 trillion for more weapons. So let's keep our scorecard. Watch your black elected officials and see how they vote on this thing. Because they don't want to look bad for the Democratic Party that they don't support the troops. So, I don't want to cast no vote ahead. Let's see what happens. Because believe me, this guy ain't just blowing smoke. He going to come with them with some proposal to raise that allocation to $1.5 trillion. Now, he just had Richard, let me show you. And it's not just him. It's this country as a whole and these Europeans' way of thinking. Because this just didn't start with him and Israel going over there killing religious leaders and starting the war. And that. This thing has been brewing ever since the 70s when they kicked that Shah out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And the Ayatollah took over. That's been a target. It's just that this guy said, let's do it now. Him and his brothers in Israel said, let's do it now. But he just went on to television last week and said, listen, they don't have capabilities. The surface-to-air missiles is destroyed. We control the air. They don't have nothing. We're going to blow them back to the Stone Age. He just said that last week. And almost a day or two later, they done shot down two F-15 fighters, and those planes are supposed to be able to avoid radar. He shot down two F-15 fighters and two Black Hawk helicopters. I wonder how they did that. With a slingshot?
No, now don't go people in no David and Goliath.
No, I'm just saying, come on. This idiot went on to television and told folks one thing, and this war is it's a war. It's war.
But does that go to the point about the system of propaganda?
Yeah, let me you know what, Richard, let's take a brief break. When we come back, I want to share some of the opinions of Marcus Garvey in reference to what he said about propaganda. And when he said this, Richard, let's see if it's very relevant to now, because I want you to kind of go into this from your perspective, because you've raised this topic on the program. You raised it with Jared Ball when you know, we had him on a couple of occasions. I just want to, and this is the first time I'm really kind of looking at it. So, let's do that after the break. And then after the break, also, I want to talk about some of those things. This new executive order. Now, he did an executive order in January, but there's another one he just did in reference to this DEI. I want to kind of talk about that and kind of point out the hypocrisy of this system that we live under, period. Not just necessarily focusing in on this guy that's presently in there. We'll do that after the break. We're in open forum. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for an awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an awakening. With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. IBBToMe.com, IBBToMe.TV, IBBToMeTV.com, IBBToMe.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. IBBToMe.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. abibitumi.store is here for you. ABIBITUMI. Black Power. ABIBITUMI. The only word you need to know to join your global Kometsu Black family, to join your interconnected Kometsu Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
It does not profit black people or poor people anything to have the vote and not be able to select the candidates who they want to choose. Now, how can you choose between Lyndon Johnson, Nixon, Agnew, Wallace, and Humphrey? There is no choice. Evil is evil. There's nothing in between that. I think the vote can only be used as a tool of organization. We can only use the vote to organize our people. Now, to really believe that we can put someone in office and that these people would be responsive to our needs, it's naive, politically naive. Because even if one of the black candidates who ran for office was to take the office of president, then black people must be prepared to fight against that person. Why? Because, you see, the system mandates the action of the individual. The individual does not determine how this country will function. This country works off the military-industrial complex, which means that it's profitable to wage war. And unless you, you know, devise another plan, another scheme to sustain, to boost this economy, then it's going to be necessary to wage war. Whether, you know, a black individual is in office or a white individual is in office. Well, so we're talking about a complete a change in system.
The system is rotten to the core. That's why every time we have had a presidential election, whether it's white or black, you always have to choose between the lesser of two evils. So you either vote for Satan or the devil, and you catch hell with either one.
This included comedians, comics, trumpet players, baseball players. Show me in the white community where a comedian is a white leader. Show me in the white community where a singer is a white leader, or a dancer or a trumpet player is a white leader. These aren't leaders. These are puppets and clowns that have been set up over the white community and over the black community by the white community, and have been made celebrities, and usually say exactly what they know that the white man wants to hear.
One black man believes in violence, one believe in integration, one believe that one day after we all marry white women, we'll all be a light brown color and there'll be no problem. One believes that if we get enough politics and education, we can take over the country and be the mayor and the president. One believe, such as I, that separating on some land will solve it. Cleaning up our own neighborhoods, respecting our own women, and doing something for ourselves and quit begging white people. This is our solution.
You know, we really are being colonized. In a colony, the education is controlled from outside. The politics is controlled from outside. The economics is controlled from outside. The police in a colony are not there to serve and to protect, but there to keep the colonized ones from disturbing the status quo. The question is, do we want to continue to live as a colony, or do we want to be like the original 13 colonies and decide that we've had enough? Let's break from a colonial past and let's seek freedom.
Time for an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 7:19 on this Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. Our guest this evening is you, an open forum conversation. You can give us a call if you want to put your opinions to the marketplace of ideas. But dial 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Richard?
Yes, yes.
Let me go into some of this from the philosophy and opinions of Marcus Garvey. The message to the people. I think it was lesson number 16, propaganda. Richard, I want to read this, and it's not long, but I think it's a lot there, and I want to get you to kind of throw your spin on it to what our elder is trying to, the message he's trying to get us to understand. It says, propaganda means to propagate or to make known extensively some particular phase of human intelligence. The desire is to convert or influence the people to the acceptance of the truth of that particular intelligence that is sought to be spread among them. Propaganda can be true or false in its origins or intent, but it is always directed at the public for the purpose of winning the support of that public to the sentiment expressed in the propaganda. If you hate a man, giving him a bad name may explain one of the purposes of propaganda without truth behind it. Nearly all organized efforts have a system of propaganda to convert people to their principles and to get them to support them, even though they may be no merit behind them at all. Propaganda is all around you to make you buy a special brand of cigarettes, although no good, but advertised to be the best, to make you drink or use a certain brand of tea, telling you of its wonderful qualities and its everlasting benefits when there's absolutely nothing to it. Before the war of 1914 to 1918, the Germans were known to be the most cultured and scientific people in Europe. When the war started, the other nations, in order to discredit the Germans and to hold them up to world ridicule and to contempt of civilization, released a propaganda that classified the Germans as Huns or barbarians. This also revealed how organized intention can be carried to public for public conception without thought. The press, cinema, the pulpit, the schoolroom are all propaganda agencies for one thing or another. The pulpit carries religious propaganda. The schoolroom carries educational propaganda. The press carries out written propaganda. The platform carries on oral propaganda. The cinema carries out demonstrative propaganda. These methods have been devised by the white man to spread his ideas universally among them. That is why he is able, in a majority sense, to control the mind of the people in the world. The white man is a great propagandist. He fully and completely realizes the value of propaganda. Therefore, you must organize your propaganda to undo the propaganda of other people. If their propaganda affects your interests, therefore you must organize your propaganda to undo the propaganda of other people if their propaganda affects your interests. The Bible is religious propaganda. The school book is literary propaganda. The novels and books you read are all literary propaganda. all calculated to bring about certain results beneficial to the propagandists. Never forget them that you are surrounded by a world of propaganda, all dressed up and cooped up with a suit of doubtful public that is not careful about what it digests from without. The artist is also a propagandist. He paints pictures to convey the idea he wants to impress upon the non-thinking, doubtful public. The sculptor is a propagandist. He chisels and figures and portrays them to suit the aims and purposes he wants to achieve. The pictures of the Madonna and Christ and of the angels are painted portraying the white race, so to inflict upon the rest of the world the belief that God, the angels, the Holy Family are all white, as well as Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve were black. They also painted the devil and his imps of hell black to impress upon the world the belief that all that is black is evil and all that is white is good and holy. When you go to the cinema and you see the glorification of others in pictures, don't accept it. Don't believe it to be true. Instead, visualize yourself achieving whatever is present. If it's possible, organize your own propaganda to that effect. You should always match propaganda with propaganda. Have your own newspapers, your own artists, your own sculptures, your own pulpits, your own platforms, print your own books, show your own motion pictures, sculpture your own subjects. Never accept your subjects, never accept subjects as yours of another race, but glorify all the good in yourselves. Watch the newspapers, the magazines, the journals daily for propaganda against your race or your institutions. Rush into print immediately a defense of your own race institutions and organize for any attacks. Never allow an insult propagated to go unanswered by you. Be ever vigilant to down anything by way of propaganda that dishonors or discredits you. Don't help other fellows carry on propaganda against yourself or your race. All propaganda comes from the arranged desire of individuals and not from a race as a whole. It is the thinkers and leaders who originate propaganda. But by insisting on the wide distribution, they get other people to think as they like. Mm. Don't accept thoughts of others through propaganda unless it coincides with yours. Don't follow the band down the street because it plays sweet music to the propaganda of the circus manager. He may lead you to the circus tent and take away your pocketbook. That is to say, don't get in on anybody's bandwagon because he might drive you to hell with his sweet music, like the Pied Piper of Hamelin, who played the sweet pipe and led rats out of the city into the sea and drowned them. Propaganda organized by somebody else is always calculated to take advantage of you. Don't help them do that. Always ask, what is this about? What is the subject? What is the subject of this? Who has sent this out? What is he aiming at? Will it hurt me or my race? If he's trying to get an advantage over me, is he trying to get an advantage over me? Is it honest? Is it true? If you ask these questions of all the propaganda that comes up before you swallow it, you will be able to take care of yourselves. The idea of making a white man making black symbols of mourning and sadness is just to show the extreme of the purity of whiteness and his joy and happiness. Reverse this, if possible. Teach the Negro that when he is in mourning, he should wear white. When he is happy, he should wear black. This is meeting propaganda with propaganda. Hatchet with hatchet. Stick with the stick. And stone with the stone. Everything on earth is man's creations. So out of man's propaganda and out of man's minds, he has created his special system of opinions to meet his desires. Therefore, customs are based upon acceptance of propaganda skillfully engineered. Have your own propaganda and hand it down through your ages. Write your own interpretations of scriptures and history and teach them as far as the interpretation of others that affect your race. Challenge the thought of any book or other literature that dishonors or discredits you in any particular way and give it to the wildest publicity so as to undo the harm intended. Remember always that an error is not corrected, ultimately becomes fact. Never follow false statements or allegations against your race to become current and pass history as if it were fact. Richard, that's that chapter. I wanted you to kind of pull out some things that you see there in relation to some of the things you've always been talking about.
It's so interesting that we bring up this in this moment, because I think it's important for us to realize that this system of propaganda in a decentralized communication network operates differently but similarly. And what I mean by that, it has many platforms now to, you know, as he said, to organize your propaganda around, you know. Now, what Mr. Garvey at one point, you know, he was saying, and I like the way he framed that, because he was, you know, accept the truth and that it could be true or false. It's about winning the public. He's speaking on what in the beginning really to us, or we should already understand that. And it made me think, Elliot, the slave narratives that during the period before the quote unquote, you know, 13th, 14th Amendment, those slave narratives, and one unfortunately come to my mind is Frederick Douglass, another John Swans, it wasn't a slave narrative, but a kind of rhetorical writings, the writings of Black people talking about how they escaped from slavery, or what's the condition of slavery was like for them as they self-liberated. Those were propaganda instruments. So we're talking about Black people been doing self-propaganda, as he say, to organize your own propaganda. We've been doing that, right? Mm-hmm. And we're doing it successfully. And I'm just saying it because when Mr. Garvey is talking about using this, and of course that became a part of the lesson for those who were going to be a part of leadership, that he wanted to make sure they understand. But it's something that we should understand as the technology of communication change, that we have people who are, as he says, are really reinforcing the propaganda of Western European American thought. And we see that in this moment when they're saying they want to get rid of the textbooks. Then you say the books, that could be propaganda, the movies, the television, mm-hmm. the art, all of those things, right? So he's saying, you know, they're saying now they want to remove Black people's tools of propaganda so that it wouldn't be swayed, right? That's so on one hand, to realize Black people were engaged in self-propaganda, you know, for the purpose of it was a dual purpose, right? It was supposedly to convince quote unquote white abolitionists but it was also to provide motivation and inspiration to Black folks that we can overcome those, you know, fugitive slave laws, those slave catchers, those laws that were being developed in each state that was trying to limit our freedom. But for the 20th century, what Mr. Garvey was, this guy, Edward Bernays, he's considered the pioneer of what they call psychological manipulation or public opinion, right? Mm-hmm. And it was for, as you know, now this is the same period, Mr. Garvey is speaking to this as this writing is coming out. It was for to convince Americans to go into the war. They didn't want to go into that world war over in Europe. So the whole thing of propaganda was to try to convince them. So I'm raising these two things, that Black people was doing propaganda in their own self-interest, but white people needed to create, and I say white people, right? But the system of white domination needed to sway the American public. Even Black people, and we have to be clear, right? That First World War, Black people did fight. So the propaganda, I mean, they had tools in place. They needed them, but they did fight even though there were segregated armies. And what is important and why what Mr. Garvey is saying is important, and I don't like to make it personal and say Mr. Garvey, but what the UNIA, the organization, is saying is that we need to be able to put forward our own propaganda to make people understand our own position as they're trying to get us to enroll in something, even against, as some would say, our own interest. But this guy, Barnett, that was his purpose, right? To be able to move people into the war effort. And then after the war was over, to get people to start to buy things, products and today we say we don't want. I don't know if that's one thought, two thoughts to show that we're engaged in it. Because as he's saying, I like when he's brought up about the artists and sculpture, because it brought us closer to now in the relationship to the effectiveness of, because during the Black Power period, particularly, you know, we could see Black propaganda at its apex in commercial and in cultural products. I call it cultural products, right? Because propaganda underneath its basis is getting you to buy in a set of values and beliefs that will actually dictate your behavior, that get you to do something. It has to tap into something you believe in order to get you to act out on something.
Okay.
That might not be in your best interest. I don't know if that's making sense.
And that's a form of effective propaganda.
Right. Which requires, and what Mr. Garvey is saying, you know, and those of us who recognize the power of this propaganda machine, like, you can't get today, America economy is set off of 70% of the gross national product is based off of consumerism. You can't get people just to be buying stuff, just to be buying stuff as a part of their life, unless it's tied into a certain set of beliefs that you need it when you don't. And I like what I always like to bring up what the rapper said. You live in America that can get you to buy a pet rock. And you can't get people to buy in through a system of a series of truths and falseness, then to get you to believe that you can want to go out and purchase a rock as a pet. And we can't say people didn't do it. Just as an example. But the Black Power period, it mobilized the cultural, it resonated you know, with Black identity, Black solidarity, Black trust, Black imagery, right? It became so powerful, and we could see it in relationship. It took Black women from straightening to their hair from one generation to wearing a bush as a means of identity and pride. That's based off a Black propaganda machine that was reinforcing a political worldview that was intentional.
Now, Richard, what you're stating, that period of propaganda.
Right.
Was it, now, Europeans seeing that, was it dangerous to them? Did they push back?
Oh, man.
Wait a minute. Let me see if I'm following you.
Yes.
If you're talking about the 60s and the 70s,
yes.
when this was prevailing, Black people was calling themselves brother and referring to the women as sisters. So during that period, what happened in that period of the 80s? We already know what happened.
Right.
Crack.
Mm.
And it destroyed generations of Black families. The woman wasn't a sister no more because of what she was doing. Because of crack. The man wasn't no brother no more because of what he had become. Chasing crack.
Mm-hmm.
And the other brothers or sisters that was exploiting each other because of this.
Mm.
All of it brought in by somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So let's ask those questions that Mr. Garvey said, or Marcus, I'm using your term, Mr. Garvey says here, propaganda organized by somebody else is always calculated to take advantage of us. Mm. Don't let them do it. Ask these questions. What is this about? What is the object of this? Who has sent this out? What is he aiming at? Will it hurt me or my race? Is he trying to get advantage over me? Is it honest? Is it true? If you ask these questions of all propaganda that comes out before you swallow it, you will be able to maneuver and take advantage of yourself. Now, let me say something in reference to what you said earlier, because, and I'll just use the early 20th century when they started developing motion pictures and really developing mass media as far as printing presses and things of that nature. It was all types of propaganda demeaning Black people. They were stupid. They were lazy. They were rapists. They were criminals. All of it. Black people tried to push back on that with Black media. Am I right, Richard?
You're right. Right.
Now, let's push the clock up till the early 21st century with the advent of social media.
Right.
And the money that can be generated from subscribers and viewers. Right?
Right. Right.
So you'll get excuse me, you'll get Black people to make sure that they record other Blacks at their worst.
Yes.
Doing crazy stuff, beating up the woman. The woman might be doing some ludicrous stuff. You'll catch Black people at their worst and put it on social media. When some Blacks see it, that don't understand what's going on, they feel that all Blacks is doing this.
Mm-hmm.
This is part of a Black culture. That's the stupidest thing I ever heard in my life, Richard. But the advent of the social media, see, we're not fashioning all of this. We're not putting that money incentive. So when I see somebody, I see a man haul off and punch a woman in her eye or something like that, instead of going over there and say, hey, brother, what the, or trying to break it up or get two other men to go over there and restrain him, I got my phone out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm recording it. So as soon as I get central or run home to my computer or maybe do it straight from my phone, I put it on social media.
and laugh.
And laugh about it. The next thing you know, I got 10,000, 20,000, 50,000, maybe more. And that's money. You see the devilishness behind all of this, Richard? We'll be behind. We'll be behind the negative propaganda, pushing it in our own communities.
Mm.
We're not the puppet master, but we're being used.
Outsourcing. Before, they needed the tools and instruments to display, whether it was the minstrel shows, whether it was the lithograms, whether it was the zoos, or as you say, the motion pictures. They needed that. They needed to produce those images in order to create those negative images of us. But now they can outsource it to us.
Yes. And put a money figure on it. Believe me, Richard, if it wasn't no money involved in this, or somebody could get a couple of shekels, you wouldn't see all this old negative, stupid shit, stupid stuff put on social media. You wouldn't see it. You wouldn't.
And I have to say, yeah, I agree. But what it requires. What you read is Mr. Garvey saying we need to produce those propaganda images, right? We use the example of the 60s or the part of the 19th century. We produce, but that's the we who is producing the images of propaganda that reinforces a value system of this thing called self-pride and self-organization. That's we who are engaged in the recognition that we need to be a people who have self-pride and need to be self-governing. Not a people who need to get paid by somebody else to do a service for them.
Exactly.
That's two different things. But as consumers, What Mr. Garvey asks, even when he says, ask these questions, what he's asking us as individuals to be critical thinkers. That is the only way you can overcome the propaganda, the information that comes from the various, you can read academic papers, you can go and watch movies, you can engage in entertainment, and all of those areas still can be able to implant in you a image that makes you subservient to somebody else, unless you have already built up a way to analyze what you're looking at so that you can determine whether it's working in your interest or working against your interests, or working against you. And that's that critical thinking, don't expect the thought of others. It's only way you can nullify that is by having some tools of critical thinking. And that ain't easy, because they are bombarding and they put a lot of money. You say they paying people? Not only they, but everything is every image you turn to. You say, I don't watch television. Because I realize at some point, every image we turn to is, if you, you know, can become burdensome, or you can become a captive of. And I shouldn't even use the word burdensome, because critical thinking shouldn't be a burden. That should be a lifestyle. For Black folks, we should be able to analyze, code, and decode things just a part of our like we rap, compared to following things blindly, because they're putting stuff out there. What they want us to do, to follow things blindly.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I see, Elliot. That Mr. Garvey and those lessons were, trying to get across. But that is also, again, what you read out of there, was training for leadership. I have to ask, Elliot, at any level, do you think we have in place leadership that is being trained in how to decode the propaganda that's being put in front of us? Do we have the children who's consuming a lot of this now trained to do the critical thinking? When I do tours, and we're doing a tour, I was mentioning to Dr. Henderson, you know, when I do the tour, like, you know, Ruth Carter, and she has Black Panther and, you know, all of these different costumes. So when I got to Sinners, one thing that can't, you know, come out, I don't know for those who've seen it, like a part of the first part of the film, when you're talking about vampires, are the white supremacists. They're the bloodsuckers of Black life. Before you even get to the vampires. And to be able to try to get young people to see when they're watching these movies that they should be picking them apart. Or with Black Panthers that, you know, why is the CIA the good guy in a Black Republic that is so powerful with such a powerful wealth? And going and wanting it to be shared. Like, we have to be able to assist in being confident that when we're looking at this material, we can be able to apply critical thinking.
Yes.
I don't know if I'm correct with that, Elliot. I don't know if you agree.
No, I totally agree. That's a quality that if we don't have it, we need to teach it to our young people. That critical thinking, that comprehension. You know, you can read a book or read a chapter or read a page, and then I can say, well, Richard, explain what you've seen in that. Then you, like, almost like you're lost. You can't really comprehend, even if you can read these English words. Reading and comprehension is two different things.
Right.
Being able to express an ideal and stand by it. Looking at what, and sometimes we try to do it on even a level here on this program. Looking at what things Douglas said or Du Bois said or any of the men back there during the struggle. To comprehend and put it in words what they were trying to convey. Sometimes it's easy when you look like these men because the spirit, that spirit will tell you exactly what they're talking about. For the ones who understand what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
That spirit will talk to you and let you know exactly what those men meant and what they were trying to convey. Delaney, all of those men, Garnett, David Walker, especially in their writings, you can almost read between the lines what they're saying.
And they could be directing who they talking to.
Exactly. You know, that's why I loved it when those men met with Sherman down in Savannah. Because you didn't have to read between the lines. They said exactly what they was talking about when they said, listen, we want our own land. We want to live separately from you. Because the hatred is so great among your people that we ain't going to be able to deal with this right now. That's not even talked about among certain segments of our people. Certain segments that have brought into, and I don't want to say brought into being assimilated, but sometimes the actions show that they have. Certain segments of our people, that's especially in leadership, they don't want to talk about what those men felt. You don't even have to think. They sensed clearly what they were saying. Clyburn just wrote a book about the first seven or something like that.
Right.
He should spend time really expressing what those men meant when they met down there with Sherman and told the government. But because at that time, the government, which was Lincoln, sent an embassy down there to black people because they helped turn the tide and win that war. Okay, so what do you want? That's basically what he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
And the men, and well, I don't know whether it was women there. They weren't present or they weren't mentioned. But I'm quite sure that they were heavily involved in the decision-making, because that's what we were culturally as a people at that time. They told them exactly what we wanted. We want our own land, and we want to live separately by ourselves. None of that was done.
And we have the day, you mentioned about the crack, but we have the day, the black manosphere, or, you know, these identity constructions, the women who want only a certain type of man, like these are coming through these messages, and we have to look at them because they're in this moment. People are listening in this decentralized information network. They are listening to these messages. And when you don't have the tool of critical thinking, or as Brother Otis is saying, deconstructing, then you're now taking sides. And that becomes a breakdown to the social order.
Yes.
Because there's no trust. There's no relationship. There's no basis for being a people.
And you're bashing one another based off some type of Western values. You gotta make a certain amount of money. Come on, what? Everything is based off something financial.
And individualistic.
Yes. That's not our culture. That might be some type of weird behaviors that we've adapted since we've been here among Europeans the past 300, 200, to 400 years. But that's not a part of our culture. Culture is your language, your value systems, your beliefs, your religion. Those things are aspects of culture. We don't know our language. English, that's our language.
Mm-hmm. No, we don't.
A lot of our value systems have been destroyed. Some of our people through the years have had kept vestiges of our value system. But all of those things were systematically destroyed. By the people who enslaved us.
Or need to control us.
Exactly. And that's the only way they could control you. If they do psychological damage to who you are as a people. Take away your culture. Take away your customs. Take away your value systems. And replace them with others. Richard, I see that the Black Caucus had wrote a pushback. Because this president just signed a new executive order in reference to this DEI. Now, he did an executive order in January of 2025 in reference to affirmative action, if you remember.
Right.
This one is about the DEI. But if you go back, Richard, and if you just start from the beginning of the 20th century, when Wilson came in and what he did, and kind of look at it from that order, you'll see something really strange. And when I say really strange, I'm being smart.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems like every generation, our people is dealing with the same thing.
Right.
I know you would agree with that.
Oh, yes.
Now, let me read something. This is from a published report that was did at the University of Cal Berkeley. And it was done by this professor. The National Bureau of Economic Research put out this paper. It was done by Asian professor Gua Zhu. He was assistant law professor at the University of Berkeley. And he did a study looking at Woodrow Wilson's racist policies and how it eroded black life and black civil service at that time. Now, Richard, you sent me something that Roosevelt did.
Truman. Was it Truman? Truman.
I think it was Truman or Roosevelt?
No, go ahead.
Well, before you get to that, let me build the scenario by sharing some of this. Because it all goes to basically what we're dealing with now.
Mm-hmm.
And this is from the study that was done by the University of Cal Berkeley in 2020. And this National Bureau of Economic Research put out this paper by, they had this professor, Gua Zhu, who's an Asian professor, do this research on Wilson's policies. Let me read a couple of paragraphs of this. It says, before the election of, I'm sorry, should have hit that call button. Before the election of President Woodrow Wilson, black Americans worked at all levels of the federal government. When Wilson assumed office in 1913, he mandated that the federal workforce be segregated by race, leading to the reduction of black civil service workers, income, increasing a significant income gap between black and white workers, and eroding some gains that black people made following Reconstruction. That was the finding by the National Bureau of Economic Research, the work done by Cal Berkeley Professor Gua Zhu examined how Wilson's far-reaching segregation policies affected black workers relative to white workers during the same era. Now, we all know about Wilson, and because we talked about it on the program, about, and let me read this here, Richard, that's in this paper. Though black voters had historically supported Republican Party at that time, Wilson, a Democrat, gained support of many black voters, including W.E.B. Du Bois, Booker T. Washington, and James Monroe Trotter, due to his campaign promising of equal treatment and racial segregation, ending racial segregation and instituting equal treatment. His racial segregation order came swiftly and suddenly, taking black Americans by surprise. Now, we know what happened in reference to that because Trotter went to his office. You remember he went to the White House, Richard?
Yeah.
And confronted Wilson about it. I mean, he got up in his face. He was thrown out of there, but, you know, he went up there and confronted him about it. But let me continue on here with a couple of paragraphs with this professor wrote. Segregation was implemented first at the post office, which was home to over 60% of federal jobs at that time and employed many black workers. The next was at the Treasury Department, which had the second largest number of black workers. To examine how Wilson's segregation mandate affected them, the researchers relied on several historical data sources. First, they digitized the 1907 to 1921 U.S. official registers, which lists every person who worked for the federal government. They also used personnel records from the U.S. Postal Service and linked them to the 1910 U.S. Census. On average, black workers held lower paying jobs than white workers prior to the segregation mandate. Across all departments and jobs, black civil servants earn on average 37% less than white civil service workers in 1911, driven largely by the fact that they were disproportionately represented in lower paid menial jobs. To isolate the effect of the segregation policy, the researcher needed to look at people in comparable positions. They did this by matching black workers with similar white workers in the same departments with similar levels of experience and pay before Wilson's term ended in 1919. Comparing these equally situated black and white civilian workers after the implementation of the segregation policy, they found that black and white earning gaps in the civil service increased by about 7 percentage points between 1913 and 1921, a big effect that increased the existing earnings gaps by almost 20%. We were struck by how damaging the policy, now this was a quote by this professor, we were struck by how damaging the policy was on the careers of black civil servants, even after Wilson left office, Zhu says. We were struck how damaging these policies were on the careers of black civil servants. Those effects lasted beyond generations. It was a crucial matter for the design of the policies that were aimed at closing painful, persistent racial inequities we observe today, says Zhu. The negative effects were largest in the departments that strictly enforce the segregation orders, such as the post office and the treasury. The agricultural department, which initially resisted the segregation orders, saw similar effects. Researchers found evidence that black workers were more likely to be demoted, were more likely to enter federal workforce at lower levels. For example, while black workers held 13% of the post office positions, the order led to a 7% decline. Zhu and his assistant were working to understand whether these deleterious effects had persisted to the next generation of family members connected to the affected workers. Now, Richard, we see here that what he's saying in this paper is that the policies that were initiated by Wilson affected not only those workers, but generations of black workers be after them in the jobs that they were attaining. Now, keep in mind that you already had the Civil Rights Act of 1866 that was supposed to protect black workers. Right?
Right.
So, we see here that the pushback during Wilson's administration, which led to a decrease in black workers, a major decrease in black workers, civil service employees. At that time, it was 13%. You remember what I read?
Right.
Now, let's look at this here.
And let me just say, you were right. It was Roosevelt.
Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, this was the order that this president here signed in 2025, ending affirmative action for government requirements for government contractors. Now, this particular one that was put out by this Holland and Knight Law Office kind of categorizes all of what I'm talking about here. And then let me read it. President Donald Trump has eliminated the requirement for federal contractors to maintain affirmative action programs. His order, the Ending Illegal Discrimination and Restoring Merit-Based Opportunity, revokes Executive Order 11-264, the Equal Opportunity, Equal Employment Opportunity Act, which was signed by Lyndon Johnson in 1965. Okay, now let's go back, because it doesn't take into account what I just read about Woodrow Wilson and the damage that was done. Here's just the quote-unquote correction for the damage that was done by Wilson. And you shared it with me, but I'll read it in this law office paper that they put out. It says, in 1941, President Franklin Roosevelt signed EO 8802. Outlawing discrimination based on race, color, and national origin in the federal government and defense industries. In 1943, Roosevelt extended the coverage of EO 8802 by making it applicable to all government contractors. That was what you shared with me, Richard, right?
Right.
So I guess he called himself correcting the damage that was done by Woodrow Wilson, right?
Right.
Okay. Now, let's keep on. I'm going to keep on going. In 1953, President Dwight Eisenhower issued EO 10479 to require federal agencies to include their contracts, a provision obligating the government contractors not to discriminate against any employee, applicant, for employment because of race, color, or national origin, and obligating the government contractor to include a similar provision for subcontracts.
Mm-hmm.
The policy of non-discrimination implemented by Roosevelt and Eisenhower. Now, wait a minute, Richard. Now, we see here that Wilson cast it out. Eisenhower and Roosevelt signed an order, putting it back in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, Executive Order 10-925, signed by John F. Kennedy in 1961, was the first policy to implement affirmative action. The executive order stated that federal contractors should take affirmative action to ensure that applicants be treated equally regardless of race, color, a national origin, a religion. So wait a minute, Richard.
Please, I'm glad you, because that threw me off. But go ahead. I'm going to see if we're on the same page.
Wait a minute. Roosevelt stated, you can't do this. You got to hire by race, and you can't block applicants for federal jobs and contracts based on race, creed, color, and national origin, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Eisenhower, in 1953, writes the same thing, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Executive Order 10-925 by John Kennedy in 1964 says the same thing, but he's saying affirmative action, meaning let's do it right now, right?
Mm-hmm. Which they were supposed to be. That's from 40 to 60. That's 20 something years.
Yes.
That they were supposed to be doing it anyway.
Doing it.
But they needed to come back.
Now, wait a minute, but I ain't even finished yet. Let me go keep on going. In 1965, President Lyndon Johnson issued EO 11-246, requiring contractors to take affirmative action to implement policies non-discriminate based on race, creed, color, and national origin. That was in 65.
Mm-hmm.
Under EO 12086 of 1978, President Jimmy Carter directed that enforcement of affirmative action obligations be overseen by the Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs, a special office within the Department of Labor, to oversee the conduct and make sure government agencies are in compliance with the investigations and evaluations of federal contractors, subcontractors, personnel, and policy procedures. So wait a minute. Carter comes in 78, basically reaffirming affirmative action. And I'm setting up a new office to make sure you're doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Obama signed something in 2014, but his was dealing with something totally different. I'll read his, but it was under that banner of the affirmative action. In 2014, President Barack Obama signed EO 13672, amending EO 12246, which was Johnson's, to include sexual orientation and gender identity under the affirmative action policies. So Obama put this other stuff, gay and lesbian, you know, in the thing.
Right. But
the point I'm trying to raise is, now wait a minute, I'll finish with this last statement by this law office, because I just read over to you 7 presidents that signed basically the same orders saying, hire black people, treat them fairly, give them government contracts, and blacks should get federal contracts, right?
Right.
We've had 7 different presidents sign these similar orders. Like we're on a treadmill with our feet moving, but we ain't really going places.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this last paragraph, I'll read it based in this report. The enforcement of affirmative action requirements has been subject of scrutiny recently. In 2023, the Supreme Court found that colleges administering policies using race as a factor violate the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment of the Constitution. In the fall of 2024, the U.S. District Court for Southern District of Texas held that the Office of Federal Compliance Enforcement Proceedings before the Department of Labor violate the CARE Clause in Section 2 of the Constitution. Trump's new executive order revokes Executive Order 11246 and Executive Order 13672 and their implementation regulations, as well as several other initiatives that were designed to promote inclusion for government contracts, grant recipients, jobs, and others. So we see from this chronological documentation or order, Richard, that all of this stuff has been basically a dog and pony show.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how else would you word it, Richard? Where all of these presidents is coming in, signing executive orders, saying blacks need to be represented on these jobs. And I'm not saying that no blacks got jobs, of course, blacks did.
Mm.
But the representation on these jobs is not commensurate to what it was supposed to have been in regards to their population. Now, let me throw this in here, too.
Let me put this in because I hopefully what you're getting ready to throw in it supplements it. Because through all of those presidents, and all of those executive orders, they're just that, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're executive orders. They're not laws. So they're telling them this is what they should be doing, but the Congress is not writing a law to make sure it gets done. So I just thought that that's important to bring up.
Now let me, this is, these are kind of, now keep in mind too, that after 2024, when the Supreme Court outlawed affirmative action, a lot of these universities, agencies, they don't have to keep these stats anymore because they're not required to. Before, they had to keep stats on how many blacks was hired, how many blacks was accepted to your university, things like that, because they had to turn it over to the federal government to make sure they were in compliance, as we read earlier, right?
Mm-hmm.
But now that it's been outlawed, they're not required to keep them anymore. Now, some of these stats, that's why some of these stats I'm reading is like 2, 3, some of them 4 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But we can see that the discrimination ain't stopped, so it don't matter if the stats are old. It's still, the damage is still there. So, but let me throw this in. And keep in mind that it said that when Wilson took over, that blacks was 13% of the federal workforce, and most of them was in the post office and in the Treasury Department.
Mm.
Now, these are recent stats from the Equal Opportunity Commission, the EEOC, Survey 1 data that was released 2 years ago. It says 60% of federal workforce are white. 60%. Compared to 76% of private sector jobs are held by white individuals.
Mm.
19% of the federal workforce identify as black. Now, keep in mind, Richard, this is up until 2024. 18 to 19% of the federal workforce identified as African Americans, a higher rate than the 13% share of black workers in the overall civilian workforce. Government employment is particularly significant for black women, with roughly 22% working in the public sector, federal, state, and local. 12 to 13% of the U.S. private sector workforce are African American, and they constitute 13% of all U.S. workers. Significant in the roles that are service roles. 21% of African Americans are in service roles, are in sales or office jobs. 21.2% and 21.5% respectively. They have higher representation in those roles. The low representation are, they are underrepresented in professional management and technical occupations, roughly 10 to 11% of these fields. According to the reports from the U.S. Equal Opportunity Commission, the EEOC, analyzing Survey 1 data, African-American participation in private sector workforce increased from 8.2% in 1966 to 13% in 2023.
Mm-hmm.
And the white participation in that same U.S. labor workforce in 1966 was 88%. In 2023, it was 76%. So even though, Richard, that you had an increase in 1966, and this is the private workforce, this is not federal.
Right.
Even though you had an increase in 1966 from 18.2%, from 8.2%, it was because of those affirmative action mandates. In 2023, it was only 13%. That's only a 4% increase.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind, your population has maybe tripled since then, quadrupled. Wages have gone up. But you only got a slight increase there.
Right.
So, again, this is what I'm saying about the treadmill effect. These things, our people keep repeating these things generation after generation and seem like they were expecting different results from the people we're dealing with.
And you know, yes. And it goes against what the propaganda is about, because, or at least what I want to tie into it, and I don't have the statistics on this, but even as you read that, most of the survey was dealing with labor, different types of labor, of different degrees of skilled labor as far as the increase in Black population. But when we're talking about integration, right, you need to be a part of the supply chain. I'm saying the business to business.
Yeah, exactly. Not just labor. Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
So the thought came to me in listening to, you know, the reports in relationship to the target, because yes, you put more businesses on the shelf, but what is the supply chain integration of Black businesses that are behind that makes that company do what it does? And it's the same thing with government contracts. When we're talking about a large part of the government procurement could go to, or at least a segment, to be fair in the language, go to the defense industry, what is to the supply chain? Because those businesses would be hiring those Black businesses that are integrated within the supply chain to the development, even of those weapons that I don't agree with, but to the development of those weapons, those businesses would be hiring Black people, which means that they would need certain skill levels of employment in order to service the business. Because the indication is that if you have Black businesses, they're going to hire Black people. But if they're just on the other side of the ledger as employees, even though they're high skilled, like it was mentioned, they had 300,000 removed out of government work, a large portion of them Black women. So is that no different than what you were saying about Wilson, because they were a part of the late, they weren't a part of the business supply chain that supported, and that was the First World War, or when those executive orders were saying hiring, they weren't during the Second World War, during Roosevelt. How many of those Black businesses were a part of the supply chain to that war effort that would have grown, scaled up, because they were integrated within the productive system of, like, the McDonald's Nuggets and all these other companies that are continuing, whether they win or lose, still going to get government contracts, because they're integrated within the supply chain of the government to produce those armaments. I don't know if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Ellie, but
no, I know. I know. Well, it's stated that most of the Black employees, both men and women, were in clerical positions, lower scale federal jobs.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad that you brought up the propaganda part, because one of the tools that you raise is in raising the right question, then getting the supply of the data and to support what is actually going on, and continuing to use your critical thinking to understand what is apt to be able to say, wait a minute, there's a pattern here, and it doesn't match up to, because what does meritocracy mean with this history? So now you're saying we ain't going to deal with any affirmative action or any proportional, you know, we're going to deal with merit. Well, that didn't exclude merit from the beginning, did it? Those people weren't incompetent, unless you're raising the question that the people who were brought in were incompetent.
Yeah, well, you know that wasn't true, and they know it wasn't true either.
I mean, I heard people who talked about their parents, you know, who while they were working at the post office, They started a business and they went to school because that was in order to give them that middle income, middle class status. Yeah, it's and here we are now.
Let's take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue. We've got 30 minutes left in the program. We've got a couple calls up here, and I'm going to get right to them right after the break. You can reach the program by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for an awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an awakening. With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today, 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Escape the digital plantation. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. Abibitumi.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. Abibitumi.store is here for you. Abibitumi. Black Power. Abibitumi. The only word you need to know to join your global Kometsu Black family, to join your interconnected Kometsu Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. Abibitumi.com. Abibitumi.tv. Abibitumitv.com, Abibitumi.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
We are the watchmen on the wall. You are too. You watch with a political eye. We watch from a spiritual eye. But we're supposed to be the watchmen for the people that vote for us. The sad thing is the people vote. They don't give you the money to run your campaigns. So here come big business.
How are you? How are you, Judge? How are you, Alderman? How are you, Congressman? How are you? How are you, Reverend? Well, what can I do for you today, Reverend?
You can't do nothing for me. See, that's what we got to be careful of. We got to be careful of who we bow down to. But see, when you get in your congregation and you talk this Jesus, this powerful Jesus that's sitting at the right hand of the Father with all power in his hand, then you go with your hat in your hand to the governor, to the mayor, to the president, begging for some crumbs. You have sold your God cheap. And you make the white man downtown disrespect all of us. Yeah.
There are between 38 and 50 million people in the United States of America who are poverty-stricken, making income less than the poverty level. And yet, this is the richest nation in the history of the world. Our national gross product this year will go beyond $800 billion. And yet, there are between 38 and 50 million people who are poverty-stricken. Now, there's something wrong. A lot of people are afraid to say it. But I don't mind saying it. You see, somebody said to me the other night, don't you think, Dr. King, you are going to have to start speaking more in terms of the administration's policy? Because since you started talking against the war in Vietnam, it's hurt the budget of your organization, and people who once respected you don't respect you anymore. And I had to look over and say, sir, I'm sorry, but you don't know me. I'm not a consensus leader. I don't determine what is right and wrong by looking at the budget of my organization. And I don't determine what is right and wrong by taking a Gallup poll of the majority opinion. And so because there's something wrong, our struggle must continue.
Some of us see the United States as the righteous empire, imperialism, colonies, and the colonized. Either you are on our side or you are on the side of evil. This is a war of good versus evil, and of course our side is the good side, our track record to the contrary notwithstanding. This is a war of right versus wrong, with our side being right, including our extermination of the Indians, our enslavement of the Africans, our training of assassins, our unqualified support for Zionism, our complete disregard of both the Palestinians and the United Nations resolution supporting the Palestinians, our suppression of third world peoples, and our disregard for the world's opinion about our racism and our refusal to discuss reparation for blacks and the victims of the West African chattel slave trade. No, our absolute arrogance in refusing to acknowledge any wrongdoing in the slave trade. We won't even say, I am sorry, and it's probably because we ain't sorry. Like I have said for years, if we repent, we just might have to repay. And we ain't about to repay. We can repay the Jews, we can repay the Japanese, but we ain't about to repay the Africans, because this is America. United we stand, and in God we trust. That's what you got on your money, but that ain't hardly what you got on your mind. What we trust in is the almighty dollar. Our money and our military. We are a righteous empire. Empire, imperialism, colonies, and the colonized. And you're either on our side or you're on the wrong side.
Time for an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8 8:39 on this Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. Got about 20 minutes or so left in the program. Anything on your mind, you can give us a call at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Let's go to Phoenix. Phoenix.
Yes, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Greetings, my brother.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
You know, what you said there about propaganda that Marcus Garvey said, that Marcus Garvey spoke about. There is a little chapter, a little paragraph in that philosophy and opinion called The Aptitude of the Negro to Disobey Orders Coming from Himself. And Marcus Garvey spoke about that, about our people. He said, out of 100 orders he gave, only 2 was followed. So, you know, I just said earlier, we keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. What's the definition of that?
Madness.
Madness. So that's what they do. They keep us running around in America, tell you, oh, we're going to give you this, and they take it back. Running around in a circle. Running around for the last 400 plus years, we've been running around. It's time to get off. It's like somebody today, they were telling me about, you know, today's Easter and this and that and yada, yada, you know. And they tell me about Jesus. And I said to them, I said, you know what's the name of the first slave ship that came to America? No, the name. I said, go look it up. It's called the Good Ship Jesus. Jesus of Lubeck. That's the name of the first slave ship that come. I said, I wonder if we still on the slave ship. I wonder if we are still on the slave ship psychologically as black people. You see what I'm saying? Because you say something, you know, about culture. Our language you speak, English. We ain't from England. You see what I'm saying? So them people don't tamper with our minds. It's psychological warfare on a state level. That's why they make sure everybody get a TV. Hey, you ain't got a TV, I credit you one. Make sure everybody get a Bible. Here, take one. Because they got to get to your head. It's psychological warfare. See? But it's, I think the bottom is getting ready to fall out. The bottom is getting ready to fall out. And you see, a lot of people saying, oh, Trump, this Trump is there for a purpose, you know, because I eavesdrop on white people. See, I make sure I go eavesdrop on them. Hey, what they talking about? Listen what they're saying. What they're planning to do, they want to crash this system. Because they know this system is done played out. You see, they got to come in with a different economic system. So what they have to do, they have to crash this year's present system to come in with that digital system. That is his job. That is why he's there. They place him there for that, because, you know, he ain't got much sense. So they got other people behind him, you know, hey, do this, turn this, do this. See what I'm saying? But they know what they're doing, because they know this system is getting ready to, they got to get rid of it. They got to get rid of this economic system and come in with another system where they can control black people and control the world, which they're trying to do. But there is always a slip between the cup and the lip. Anyway, good brothers, keep on keeping on. I appreciate this program 1,000%. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your contribution.
No problem.
Hey, what'd he say, Richard? There's always a space between the cup and the lip. Let's go to Philadelphia. Philadelphia.
Good evening, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. How y'all brothers doing tonight?
Yes, sir.
I'm glad y'all doing well. Our praises be to Allah. It's good to hear Brother Marcus, man. Good points, Brother Marcus. Very good points. You know, when you and Richard first came on, Brother Elliot, Richard had referred back to the famous dialogue between Nelson Mandela and Ted Koppel. And Brother Richard, you made a very good point because and when he put Koppel in his place, when he was up there trashing Gaddafi, Yasser Arafat, and Castro, you know, the men and all these men, and like Brother Mandela told him, he said, they might be your enemies, they ain't no enemies of mine. Because like I said, when this man was languishing in prison for almost 30 years, these men helped take care of his family and stuff like that, you know what I mean? So he said, they might be your enemy, they ain't mine. And see, that's where, see, and it's the same for the here in 2026, you don't have hardly any of these black politicians or black media people can stand up and say that. When they demonize the Ali Khamenei, the late supreme leader of Iran, or Maduro, or anybody else who they trash, who's the villain of the day, none of these niggas have enough independent mind. They like they a damn effing child. They can't think for themselves to sit there and say, well, hold up. I may not know too much about Maduro or the supreme leader, but they never did nothing to me as a black person. They don't have enough damn heart to say that. They say the same old stupid shit, or he's a bad guy, or he's a bad actor. You know, they're so stupid and juvenile and childish in their mindset and stuff. They don't have enough sense. Muhammad Ali showed you the way back in 67 when he got stripped of his title. Ali said, look, I ain't got no qualms to Viet Cong. They never called me no nigga. You know what I mean? I mean, they didn't even learn from Ali and stuff. They had the courage to speak truth to power. You know what I mean? They sit there and say the same old refurbished garbage that their white counterparts say. They sickening with this stuff, man. You know what I mean? Like they don't have a mind their own. And matter of fact, I was looking on my phone, and a friend of mine sent me a tape of Ali, because Ali, in his day, he was saying some things that was, you know, you forget some of these things Ali was involved in, because, you know, time passed, and you remember, you kind of forget things. My first time in the phone was back in the early 70s, Ali put this white woman, this show you how Europeans, like you always say, Ali, how Europeans got this racial white, so-called white superiority, no matter where they come from Europe or they in America. Now, he got this white girl, this back in the early 70s, was on a talk show. This white woman from England, she gonna come over here and tell Ali how black people are no good, how they don't do nothing but lazy. And Ali said, white woman, you got some damn nerve to sit there and come over here and trash my people when your white ancestors raped, thrived in Plymouth, Africa, put us over here in chains, because you're white, you benefit everything for being white. How dare you? I mean, how did he chop this white woman's head up, man? I mean, I never saw that particular interview. If I saw it, I may have forgot because time, you know, memory been so long ago. But he put this white woman in her place, man, because he let her know who the hell you think you're talking to. And she said, well, I don't think that you have a right. Ali said, I don't give a damn what you think. He told her, Muhammad Ali told her straight up, I don't give a damn what you think. That's right. I mean, you need to have black people that can speak truth to power. You know what I mean? They're not scared of these white folks, man. You know what I mean? So that's why the most honorable Elijah Muhammad loved Adam Clayton Powell. Though Adam Clayton Powell was a Christian minister, he said his mind would support him in office, running for office, because he kept it simple. He said he's not afraid of white people. I mean, he kept it very simple. He's not afraid of white people. And that's the main thing, that you got some of these Negro politicians, whether it be politicians or media people, they're scared the hell of white people. And that's the bottom, whether they admit it or not, they is. That's why they sit up there out of their ignorance or their cowardness, just go along with the stupid stuff that come out these white people's mouths, man, and they repeat the same old stuff, man. You know, like, for example, and I said a few more things and I get off. I listened to the terrestrial radio station today. Dr. Umar Johnson was on, and he made a very good point to the host, because he was talking about because the host said that Roland Martin recently said that he, him and Reverend William Barber, who I have a lot of respect for, he's a good man, and do a lot of great things for our people. He said him and Reverend Barber made a comment. They call it for black folks to come together as a collective, which Dr. Umar said I agree with. He said, but the problem, he said, brother, is that I know what Reverend Barber's heart is at, because he definitely cares. He said, but as far as Roland is concerned, he said, all he wants to do is to come together to do what? Continue to vote for these scoundrels in the Democrat Party. He said, if your only solution is to tell black people to come together, which we should come together, but if you're not going to tell black people to come together to strip our economics and our overall health and well-being as a people of Brother Elliot and Brother Richard if all you're going to do is have black people come together to keep voting for these sorry-ass Democrats, be they black or white, then what's the point? You know what I mean? Right, in other words, you want to be a mouthpiece for the Democrat Party. As he told the host, he said, Roland Martin as well as Al Sharpton, you know, let's not sugarcoat it. They are paid mouthpieces, and they get paid very well. They're mouthpieces for the Democrat Party. All they want to do is have black people go from the, you know, stay on the black, on the Democrat plantation as opposed to being on the Republican plantation. And as far as my knowledge tell me, a plantation is a plantation, whether you're on a black, on a Democrat one or Republican one, because the same white folks and entities support both parties. So in other words, Tim Scott and Byron Donald, they are equivalent to the Hakeem Jeffries and the Gregory Mix on the Democrat side. But, of course, nobody in the black media want to call that out. They want to keep black people in that Democrat plantation. But both of them ain't no damn good. Both of them don't give a damn about the plight of black people. If you want to be for real about the situation, and, again, I'm not saying nothing. That's no earth-shaking or revelation. It is what it is. But people want to just, you know, go along in this fantasy that is some kind of big difference between both parties and stuff. You know what I mean? And nothing can be further from the truth. You know what I mean? Because if either party cared about black people, then we wouldn't be having this conversation right now. You know what I mean? But, you know, you're going to always have some of our people that want to keep leading our people down a Democrat plantation, because at the end of the day, it's a goal at the end of that rainbow. It's their own, for their own financial benefit. And that's just the reality, you know?
Yeah, well, Richard said they're political entrepreneurs.
Yeah, like Brother Richard nailed it when he said that political entrepreneurs is right, man. They get rich off the plight of our people and stuff, man. They get rich and rich by our people stay poor and poor, you know what I mean? And see, again, if these Negroes had enough heart to fight hard for our people and stuff like that, I could give some a little leeway, but they don't. All they're looking at is to enrich themselves at the expense of black people suffering, man. And that's the part that gets me. You benefit materially and financially, but our people are here still catching hell. Like I say, we number one as far as in when it comes to things like heart disease, diabetes, you know, all the ailments. We live in food deserts and stuff like that. And so, you know, we number one, but when it comes to economic sufficiency, we're at the bottom of the ladder. I mean, there's no accident right there, how the pendulum swings from one extreme to another, and we always at the wrong end of the spectrum. And there's no accident, Brother Ellie Richard. It's designed that way. And then about few of our black officials is addressing that. That's why when you had a brother like Charles Barron in office, he was addressing those issues. He was trying to bring some clarity and stuff and some solutions to our people. Sam was sitting, McKinney when she was in Congress. But these Negroes you got in now, they don't think like that. They're so busy tied, they're so busy stuffing their pockets for money from AIPAC and 314 and all these other damn Zionist-ass entities that support, they run these Negroes and stuff. I mean, it's a shame, and it's a sin and a shame against the Creator, man, what these Negroes do, man. You know, and last couple points, Elliot, to show you the inhumanity of these people. You know, as you know, Netanyahu, he has been bombing Gaza and Lebanon. He did it even during the height of Ramadan and stuff. And nothing changed. I hear the so-called Easter Sunday that Christians celebrate. The bombing ain't stopped. He bombing and stuff in Iran and even on Easter Sunday. I mean, these are some sick-ass people, man. I never seen a more sick, demented people. You keep talking about some damn Holocaust and what Hitler did and all this stuff, and you're doing the same damn thing to other people. You're doing it in Lebanon. You're doing it in Syria. You're doing it in Iran. You're doing it in Palestine. I mean, these are some sick-ass people. And as I said on the Terrestrial Radio Show when Dr. Umar was on, as I told him, I said, we have got to, and I'm going to continue to be the lone voice in the world in this. I know it's unpopular, but I don't say things to be popular. I say things that I think from my heart is right. I said, as a man that I consider myself a righteous Muslim to try to live accordingly to the Quran, I'm going to continue to call these house niggas out like Hakeem Jeffries, Nix, the one hand fill up for the Dr. Alice Sanford of the world, and all these other Negroes that get money from AIPAC, or anybody that's associated with AIPAC. I'm going to continue to call these Negroes out for the inhumanity and disgracefulness for accepting money from a group of people that will support openly killing women and children. So I'm going to continue. If I have to be the lone voice in the world, I'm going to stand up for what's right. If it causes me friends, if it causes me, you know, all kinds of uncomfortableness, then so be it. Because I'm going to stand up for what I believe is right. So I'm going to continue time they call these niggas out, as long as they continue to get money from groups like AIPAC and groups that, and proxies that support AIPAC. And I close on that note, okay, Brother Elliot and Richard?
Thanks for your contribution.
You're welcome.
Richard, let's take these last two.
Okay.
Call it.
Good evening. Good evening, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Thank you for taking my call.
Okay.
I know we ain't got a lot of time, so I just want to address some things Richard said, which was quite interesting to me.
Okay.
So he made mention of Edward Bernays coming to America and spreading propaganda to encourage Americans to join the First World War. That was interesting. And he went on to talk about propaganda and how it helped African-Americans to spread their own propaganda to, I suppose, revolutionize their movement. And I was thinking when he was talking how much he feels that the actual propaganda may have started long before that. I was wondering if he feels, or he may concur, that propaganda may have started in a book, an English book, called the Bible, the King James Bible, the English King James. I wonder how he felt about that.
Are you saying in the sense of spreading Western thought, or in the sense of black self-determination? And
well, I'm saying, I mean, you made reference to Edward Bernays, and quite familiar with Edward Bernays, who is the nephew of Sigmund Freud, who spent many of his indoctrination within the Tavistock Institute in London, and came to America after coming from London to America. Edward Bernays, the nephew of Sigmund Freud. So what I'm saying is, and you talked about the propaganda in the First World War. So what I'm suggesting, I just want your view, that propaganda started maybe within the English book called the Bible, the King James Bible, which was introduced in America, in the creation of America, which came off the Gutenberg Press, which was the first Bible in the Western world. I just want to know what you think about that.
Well, I would say yes, the Bible was a propaganda tool to shape about Christianity in general, was to shape a certain way of thinking and acting by those who were free and those who were enslaved. So if I understand your question, I would say my answer is yes to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also quite interested in you say, you asked the question, do we have the children who can handle critical thinking? And you asked the question, I don't know if it was a rhetorical question, but I'm going to pose the same question back to you. Do you have the children, African-American children, which can handle critical thinking?
That's for me personally. As I say, I'm, being a tour guide, I use the displays and the exhibits as a means of trying, not being a formal teacher, to actually deal with the question of critical thinking. That's I have that in my mind as I'm displaying it. So that's in one venue to use that as a tool. So and I see. I only have them for a short moment, but I do see, in the responses, that activity of analyzing critical thinking takes place. But what I'm advocating, and Brother Akil, and with all that math he does too, that this process of for the generations coming up, that every aspect of their social interaction, we as adults should be engaging them in getting some response that reflects the development of their critical thinking skills, or as Elliot said, of their comprehension skills, if that's answering your question.
Well, it's absolutely clarifying some of the things you posed. And this goes to both of you. And this is just the reason I'm asking you this, because this is a subject which I find quite fascinating. And it's a thing where I realize it's a necessary tool for I mean, you're going to talk about African-Americans, but I'm going to talk about Africans globally. I think it's a necessary tool for Africans globally to pick up if they're going to make any advancement. And, you know, so some of the things you raised really pricked my interest. But this is for both of you, yeah? For me, critical thinking must start with questions, asking questions. That's for me where it starts. Because for you to be, the objective is to become a free thinker. Because in the schooling-falling system, that's what I call it, the schooling-falling system, where they absolutely tell you you're going to get educated, but in actual fact, you're being indoctrinated. The first form of indoctrination is like Elliot, Brother Elliot pointed out, is the language. The language is not your language. The language is English from England, which has been imposed on you. And that's what you're speaking 400 years later, because you're still under that captivity. That's a fact. So what I'm saying is that indoctrination, the indoctrination is continuous, and it starts from that schooling falling system, which we beg for advancement. And I'm putting that to you. That's how I feel. But how do you feel about that?
And for Tom, and I think that this is a discussion I would love to expand on, but one of the things that, as we say, yes, language is important because they should reflect even adopted languages, because your set of values and your set of, and I'm really adamant about values, that each people define their own values and their own belief, and their values is their beliefs and also principles, because out of that, then is your behavior. So the tool that you use doesn't matter if the value system that you have, and I think that that's what's in question, and it ties to your question about, you know, whether the Bible itself or Christianity itself, as it was used, is it because it tried to and is always trying to replace a certain set of values,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it can get a certain set of behaviors for those who wish to dominate them. And we should have a certain set of values regardless of our language, so that then those values prevent others from dominating us, and we can be able to raise the right questions to make sure that what we're looking at, we can analyze it correctly.
Thank you for that. We ain't got enough time. So I'm just going to say that it's definitely a necessary subject, and it's a subject which we all need to spend a great deal of time on, because I can't point my finger as to why critical thinking is so absent among us, and it is evident that it's absent among us, really, in all levels, in master degree levels to the junior school levels. It's throughout. Even some of these people who claim they're educated lack critical thinking skills. So it's something which I think we need to really expand on and get to grips with. And like Brother Elliot said, it needs to be taught among us. We need to actually expand it. And it starts with questions. One must be willing to ask questions and answer questions. And that's another problem, especially when it comes to religion. A lot of religious people do not really like questions which sit outside of their indoctrination. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
thanks for your contribution. He's absolutely right, Richard. I be in conversation a lot, and if you even touch that subject of religion, folks don't want to talk about it. And, you know, I don't understand, if you believe wholeheartedly in a thing, why you don't want to express it, talk about it, improve. Even the Bible that a lot of folks claim to, you know, put their, hang their hat on, so to speak, says prove all things, hold fast to that which is good. So even the word that they believe in says to prove all things. So, mm-hmm. You know, if you can't prove something, then don't hold to it.
And I would add power to that too, Elliot. When you bring up the question about power, we get silent. Because in order to have power, that means you got to do something. Power don't come just by stating it.
Okay. Let me grab this last one. Go to New York City, New York.
Hey, what's happening, Elliot and Richard? Listen, I'm going to make this pretty quick. When are black people going to realize that this is a two-party system? Third-party system is basically, from what I've seen over the last couple of elections, is a white woman coming back into focus after 4 years, getting us some money, a pork chop chicken eating educator, whatever West want to call himself, coming in to do what he do. Now, my only question is this, and to show the dishonesty of our people, we talk all this shit about the Democrats, but what have the Republicans done since they've been in office that done benefited your black ass? They got you in a situation where your family members are now gonna die. The economy is in a tank. They now gonna go after whatever little bit of assets your grandmama and your grandpappy got. I mean, it's the whole situation and what they're doing, how the hell is it beneficial to your black ass? Excuse my language, Elliot. But the realization is, for all of the so-called BS you talk about, the Democrats, what have the Democrats done while they was in office to hurt you like the Republicans have? Are you in a better position today than you was a year and 3 months ago? And if any of you Negroes say you are, then it shows how collective you sick you are and why we as a people are never going to progress in this country, because we're behaving as individuals, not as a collective. And you know, one of the funniest things in the world that shows you the mindset of the Negro, just look at the mindset of the Negro. You always want to talk about Roland Martin. But ask yourself this. Aesthetically, any of these so-called media Negroes, who has a better system than he does? But he's a shield for the Democrats because he's what? Understanding and putting forward the fact that this is a two-party system, and you're either going to have Democrats or you're going to have Republicans that's in control, that dictates how your life moves forward. And here it is now that your dumbasses done put this narcissistic sick bastard who put out a message talking about all praise Allah at the end of it. Oh, you've done something. You've done something. But aesthetically, and you in media, Richard and Elliot, name me someone that has a platform visually that Roland Martin has. Who does it the way that he does? Who has their own network? Who has the aesthetics to compete with the big boys? And the only reason, to be quite frank with you, that he isn't a higher profile than MSNBC and CNN is because of the simple fact he can't give the revenue necessary to do what needs to be done. So, I mean, you know, some of y'all Negroes that talk about people, you really don't understand their aesthetics. You go talk doggish to the man all because he's trying to point out to your dumb black ass that there's a difference between a Republican and a Democrat. And here it is, the Republicans in office dogging your dumb black ass. And you still talking about some people that at least give you a better play at the game. But, hey, we gonna move forward. Yeah, how we gonna move forward? By the time this man gets out of the office, you'll be lucky if your black ass can survive in this country. And the only reason I speak like this is because my money's long, and I can survive it. As long as my money's long, I can survive it. And hey, the most beautiful thing is, I'm turning 62 this year, and I'll go get my Social Security. But the bottom line is, in the process, our people are constantly being hurt. You know why? Because we don't come together collectively. We don't understand what is really in our best interest. And we like to talk bullshit. Because I ask you this, what did the Democratic Party do to you that the Republican Party hasn't done worse to you? Tell me if your life is better since this animal done got in office than it was when he wasn't in office. And on top of this, the sad tragedy is, if he go on the ground, like I said last week in Iran, there'll be a whole lot of black people dying. And how you gonna justify that shit? Because you talking about it wouldn't happen if Kamala Harris got into office. You think she wouldn't allow Netanyahu to play her ass like he played Trump to place us in the situation that we in now? You think she would have did her so-called attack on DAI? You think she would have to cut all of the federal workers and all of that? And you know what's so crazy is, Elliot, this is the thing that really annoys the shit out of me, is that you talk about the benefits of the Republicans and the so-called taxes and things of that nature. Listen, man, the tax cuts that this clown gave us, I probably got an extra, what, $4,000 or $5,000? And what the hell is $4,000 or $5,000 gonna do? Really, seriously. Well, now I gotta pay extra for my medical coverage and other things. Think about it. I mean, you're a businessman, Elliot. Be honest. Did you benefit greatly from his tax cuts to make now what you gotta pay as a person that gotta buy insurance and things of that nature? Did you benefit as much as these assholes who don't benefit at all? Truthfully.
Well, I haven't benefited from any of these people. And
okay, so the bottom line is.
We need to struggle all we can.
If we're looking at it collectively as a family, you can't tell me that the Republicans are benefiting black people in a better sense than what the Democrats are. Just based on the thousands of jobs that's been lost, the destruction of so-called DEI, the now having to go to war, food prices, gas prices. Come on, man. Why can't we be honest? But there's tangibles. And if you ask a Negro to tell you what are the tangibles, he couldn't even tell you. Ask, next time Joe calls up next week, ask him what are the tangibles and see if he could give you concrete tangible. And I'm giving him a week to come up with it. And I'm telling you, he can't. Well, he can't tell me how you benefit from a Republican in office more than you would have benefited from a Democrat. And you say, yeah, I'm not going to vote for them because of the tangible.
Yeah, but you
what
haven't.
What the hell they ever did to your black ass?
Yeah, but you haven't heard him or this program say anything positive about Democrats or Republicans. So
No. What I'm saying is
the party
that
itself.
There's an implication. All I'm saying is that there is an implication, and I'm not just saying your program. I'm talking about collectively, because I'll be honest with you. As far as I'm concerned, the vote ain't gonna do nothing for black people. But what I'm saying is, if you go vote, go ahead and vote. But the thing is, don't vote for somebody that's going to hurt you. Don't use an excuse about tangibles and all this other nonsense when you can't articulate what it is. That's all. That's all. That's all I'm saying. I mean, that's not, as far as I'm concerned, that's not your ministry. Your ministry is to point out the bullshit. But I will honestly say this to you respectfully. You point out, I think, and it's just my opinion, I think you point out more bullshit of Democrats than you do Republicans. Because the crises that we in right now as a people is not the fault of Democrats at all. It's the fault of a narcissistic, sick animal in control of a country that is as racist to its core. That agenda is the elimination of black people, and black people mostly don't understand that. And now we in this quagmire where it ain't like our lives are getting no better.
Well, the reason
you got a situation.
Let me say this: the reason I point out what you're saying in reference to the Democratic Party is that most black people follow them. It's no need for me to point out anything about Republican Party. It's obvious as the nose on your face. Or what they believe and their philosophy and what they're pushing. So it's no need for me to point out any. I mean, it's clear.
I think people don't understand that, Elliot. I think the manner in which you
they don't understand it.
I don't think collectively black people understand. I'll leave you with this last point. People talk about and they criticize black people that don't vote and things of that nature. But I always ask them this fundamental question. I ask them two questions. Fundamentally, why should black people vote for these people? Because all they do is become rich. And like I said last week, they never improve their community. So when a young person is looking at what's going on, they ask, well, why am I voting for this person? I'm not benefiting from it. You know what I mean? A perfect example is just what happened in Texas with the white boy and Crockett. If black people were really on point and really were doing what they supposed to have done, she should have never lost to that white boy.
How
do you justify as a black person voting for some crack? I've never in my life voted for a white man. I never in my life voted for the white man. I just leave that part of the equation in. It's bad enough when I gotta vote for a Baba Louie. So hey, you know, my reality is we got to figure out, in all honesty, Elliot and Richard, what's best for us as a collective people. It's not about individual. Because when it's all said and done, if we can't move forward as a collective, then we finish. And this is the tragedy that right now is happening to us. Our lives are not getting better, man. And think about it. This is the last day. Think about the future of your babies, your grandchildren, your children. You got an 18-year-old kid today. Think about where their life is going to be at in 30, 40 years. Thank you, brother.
Yeah, well, let me say
this. And have a good night. I appreciate you.
Let me say this before you leave. If you really think that, see, because I don't have no faith, no stock. This program is not dedicated to promoting any of these parties. Now, you had Dr. West that was running as an independent. And it was clear to me why he was running. He stated it on his program. Is to rally black people who the majority of them don't vote. Now, he had principled stands to what he was talking about when he was running for president. These people, and I'm talking about, that's why I don't even say nothing about any Republican Party. Because these whites, I don't care what party at the end, a lot of them don't have any principles. And a lot of them, as a collective, are immoral. That's me saying that. I don't know who believes it or who cares to believe it. I don't know. That, if you critically look at it and critically look at their track record.
So I couldn't argue with you when it comes to morality. Well, white man don't have no morality.
Let me finish. Is I knew what he was talking about when he was talking about rallying black people, and he was taking a moral stand on this country and what they're doing globally. That's what we need to. That he's going down a path that we as a collective need to do. We need to develop conscious leadership that's going to disassociate themselves from this immoral system and these immoral people. That's what you need. Now, I don't listen. People vote and they do what they want to do as far as voting. But to think that Harris or even if Obama ran again, that things would be different, then you're fooling yourself. Now, when I say things different, fooling yourself, the extremes that this racist has taken is extreme. But as far as the policies of this country, supporting Israel, giving them all the weapons they need, it wouldn't have, nothing have changed under Harris or if Obama runs again. Nothing is going to change. You'll just have a softer master on a plantation.
Israel also, though, Elliot.
Who?
If we're going to be honest, he said it numerous of times. I've even heard him say it when he's on the Tavis Smiley show, which he's usually on twice a week. He says he supports Israel.
Oh,
and I understand what you mean in regards to Israel.
Well, I've never heard him say that, and he didn't say it here, but
Listen to him on Mondays and Thursdays at 2 at what is it, 1 o'clock Eastern time on Tavis Smiley show. He's always talking about how he supports Israel, which is right.
I intend to have him on again here, so you'll be able to ask him when he comes
here. Oh, yeah, well, you know, I will call it. But listen, Elliot, I just want to say, I think when you in danger, you try to defend yourself at all costs. I don't think that what West did and the manner in which he did it, honestly, was beneficial to black people. Because you in danger. And the danger is right here that we're facing now, that basically he could have dealt with it on a whole nother level. You know what I mean? Because it took away certain things from the collective that led us into the position that we in now. But listen, he has the right, and if he feels that what he's doing is a moral stance, then so be it. But I don't look for morality, to be very honest with you, from the Democrats or the Republicans, because they're not moral people. So, hey, you know,
thanks.
Listen, enjoy this show, man. Can't wait till you get Cynthia McKinney on, because Cynthia McKinney will probably expose more of what's going on. Because, you know, lastly is this. The one thing I hate about the media is they are what you were speaking about earlier. Propaganda. They never tell the truth. They never tell the truth about how hundreds of Americans have been killed, how Iran is defending themselves way better than what's being told, and they just make it seem like these Iranian people are lunatics and all of that. Nah, man, them people ain't lunatics, man. You know, they just believe in something that America doesn't believe. And that's why, as one would say, Allah is allowing them to defend themselves. And no, they're not being decimated. And no, they're not going to be decimated. Because if that was the case, this narcissistic animal would have already did it. But beautiful show, brother. Thank you again.
Thanks for your contribution.
Thank you.
You rigid.
Yes, yes.
Before we go, you know, it just reminded me of something our last caller said. You know, when this president had that press conference last week, and he mentioned we're going to blow Iran back to the Stone Ages. I'm saying to myself, wait a minute. Now, that particular civilization, I mean, all these civilizations stem from Africa, but that particular civilization has existed over 2,000 years. Iranians, mm-hmm. Persians, yeah. It exists over. I mean, when those civilizations, and I'm not leave ours on to the side right now, because all of them is children compared to us. But when that civilization was flourishing, it was Europeans that lived in the Stone Ages. So what is he talking about? I mean, come, are you kidding me? What the
hell? Hey, he say whatever you want to say.
Oh, my goodness. Did he, boy, I'm telling you. Wow. They only became civilized when they started venturing out. And they wanted to attack everybody that they seen. They still doing it 2,000 years later. Anybody they come in contact with, they want to dominate them, attack them, take what they have. I mean, that you see what that type of mentality that is. That's an uncivilized mentality. It is. You don't know how to live in peace with other people. You don't know what that is. No matter what you say, you don't know what that is. You can't achieve it. Or we want to live in peace. By forcing other people, by taking their resources, by forcing them to live contrary to how they lived as a nation of people.
Hey.
That's your ideal of peace. Oh, okay. All right. Richard, before we go, let me read you off the lineup on Time for an Awakening Media, Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. African Perspectives with Brother Oshie, always interesting topics, dialogue, and guests on African Perspectives. That's Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Later on Monday evenings, Our Story with Brother Wes Johnson, Brother Johnny from New Orleans, Louisiana. Man, I'm telling you, he had a good show last week. Just check him out. Check out Our Story with Brother Wes Johnson from New Orleans, Louisiana, Mondays evenings from 7 to 9. They double back on Wednesday at the same time, 7 to 9 p.m. Thursday, the door is always open for the Black Liberation Movement in Mississippi. Patrick Lumumba, Sister Crystal Denise, Brother Rodney Lowe, Brother Malik Hayes, four hosts, one mission, the Black Liberation Movement in Mississippi. Sundays, Pinckney to Pinckney from 5 to 6. Time for Awakening from 6 until. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion as always, and we'll be back next week, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the thing that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their chance to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of